Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 131 of Growth Marketing Today. My name is Ramley John, your host for the show. I'm excited to talk to Charlie Ward. He talks about how he created and grew the number one indie hackers accountability community on the internet. In this episode, Charlie shares his learnings on how he pivoted to an online-only community from a real life and what he learned by doing so. The Weekend Club is the number one solo founder support community. They offer weekly, remote, Saturday deep working sessions with other founders like the creators of SimplePool and Veed, plus 100+ software discounts. So in this episode 131, you'll learn first how to create an engaging and thriving community. Second, how Weekend Club grew to 1,800 monthly recurring revenue. And third, how Charlie measures success for the Weekend Club community. Now, before we jump in, I created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode in a one-page PDF. Seriously, what take notes about it when you can just download and steal my notes? Go to growtoday.fm/131 to get it now. You can also find this link in the description of the show. Hurry and download it before it goes away, because when I publish the next episode, I take this week's cheat sheet away. I also want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. Thanks to Ahrefs Webmaster Tool, find the top keywords you rank for, track new organic keywords, get more in-depth backlink data, and more, all for free using Ahrefs Webmaster Tool. Sign up today at growtoday.fm/Ahrefs or find that link in the description of the show. Well, enough about me. Let's jump into my chat with Charlie. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to chat with Charlie all the way from UK. We're going to be talking about community because he has a community. He's been building up this paid community so far, and it's something that it really has been brought to light because of the way things are happening around the world with COVID. But first of all, Charlie, how are things with you? How is your evening going so far?
Very good, thanks. Thanks for asking, Ramley. Yeah, things are good with me. All things considering, they're pretty good. I can't complain.
That's great. And you know, before we get started talking about community, I love asking things that get people to know you a little bit more. And you said that you're really, really into collecting records. So I'm curious, what is your favorite record that you own and why?
Yeah. So I'll just preface this by saying that, like, I'm not a DJ. Like, I'm not good at mixing. I'm probably the worst DJ on earth, but I like collecting certain types of records because I just think it's fun to collect things and have a kind of physical version of some kinds of music. But and I promise you, I'm not just picking the most like obscure kind of record that I have. But there's one I really like. It's by this group called Der Zeitlis, and it's called Elektronisch Zeitechno. It's made in 2013. So it sounds German, but it was actually made by a duo from Detroit. And they're called Drexia. So Der Zeitlis is an alias of Drexia, and it's a kind of crazy electro record. I absolutely love it. They have this kind of, what's cool about them is like, they don't just have like tons of good music. And loads of aliases. They create this whole kind of like Afro-futurist mythology, which is kind of crazy. But it's if you look at all their kind of album art and song names and all this kind of thing, it all talks into this kind of like other mythology they've created. And there's not many artists who do stuff like that kind of thing. So I just find them super interesting. So yeah, I'd have to say that's my favorite.
Fascinating. I'm going to link their stuff on the show notes. It's going to be super interesting.
They make bangers. You like them.
I'll check it out. Well, let's jump into talking about community. You know, I'm curious what your journey's been with it and what's your experience been with building and growing a community?
Yeah, so lots of interesting experiences to get into, really. So I think it's maybe helpful to say that I haven't been like a long time community builder, like some of the people you hear from. And like, you know, I think Rosie Sherry's been on your podcast before as well, right?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, she has.
Yeah. So, you know, she's been deep in community for, you know, far longer than I have. And, you know, I've learned the stuff, a lot of stuff from talking to and, you know, watching how she does it sort of thing. But overall, it's just been like an amazing and humbling journey so far. And you just meet a lot of really interesting people doing this. So, you know, the kind of two main things I've done is like, I started a meetup called Indie Beers originally. And out of that grew Weekend Club, which is the paid community I run now. And we'll get into both of those, but it's been a really interesting journey so far. I think, you know, it's been incredibly worthwhile.
Yeah, no, let's jump into that. Let's talk about Weekend Club for people who might not know what it is. What is Weekend Club and, you know, how did it get started?
Yeah, sure. So Weekend Club is a community of bootstrappers and solo entrepreneurs building projects on weekends. So it's mainly people who still have day jobs and they're often already building stuff on Saturdays or Sundays, but they're just doing it on their own in their room. So we've just created a community out of that to connect with those people from around the world, basically. So it's mainly on Slack and it's built around these remote Saturday co-working sessions. So it's kind of like a scrum sprint, but it's in one day. So the one day sprint has a stand up at the beginning of the day where everyone kind of says what they're working on, what their projects are. Then we kind of randomly match people with their sort of buddy for the day to support each other. Halfway through, there's a lunch. People can grab lunch and, you know, we have like a Q&A or like a discussion on like a kind of topic I give them before, that kind of thing. And those have been super interesting. And at the end of the day, we have like a retrospective, like reflection on the day. Because at the beginning, people say what their goals are for the day and people talk about how they did against those kind of thing. So that's the basic structure. And we do that every Saturday. I don't run it every Saturday. My colleague James, who runs the Indie Bikes podcast, runs the other ones. But yeah, it's been really fun so far. I think one thing that's maybe a little different is that we have a particular focus on, it's kind of on the surface, it sounds maybe, oh yeah, we're like a kind of remote co-working space, but we have a real focus on helping people build real relationships with other founders and just keeping things pretty fun. So that's kind of where we're at the moment.
It's fascinating because, yeah, I totally get it. Like as a hacker or somebody who's trying to start up something over the weekend, one of the challenges is, you know, sometimes you just want to give up, and having that kick in the pants does really make sense. Is that the genesis of the idea? Like where like you and your co-founder, like we want that extra shot of accountability, and this is it.
Yeah. So it's not as like kind of smooth a journey to that point. That wasn't kind of even, I wouldn't say that's even the original idea. So it kind of happened because a couple of years ago, I got really into indie hackers, like the Indie Hackers website and community podcast, that kind of thing. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard of Indie Hackers, but you should check it out if you haven't. And I was living in London. I got into it and I didn't know anyone that knew what this was. So I was like, I'd really love to kind of meet some more indie hackers. So I started a monthly meetup called Indie Beers, because in the UK, people like going to the pub, basically. So I was just like, okay, let's just go to the pub once a month with a bunch of other indie hackers and let's kind of talk about products and stuff. And over time, let's fast forward a year, people started asking me like, yeah, this is fun, but it'd be cool to kind of work with other indie hackers like on a Saturday or Sunday. Like it would be cool to kind of work on our side projects in the same room and help each other out. So it was actually originally in a co-working space and no one really said the word accountability really originally. It was just kind of like, oh, wouldn't it be fun if we could all kind of work on projects together in the same room? So it was in the co-working space originally and we started the subscription from there. And, you know, obviously COVID happened about 6 months later or so. And that was kind of quite a pivotal point because I was just like, will this work remote? I never actually had any intention of making it remote originally. There was always going to be in co-working spaces. And I was like, okay, well, let's just give it a shot. And that's kind of where it came from. So that was around March where we kind of pivoted it remote. We're like, okay, let's just like rethink this format. How does this work remote versus in person? And it's more different than you think. You can't just dump a in real life experience online and expect it to be the same. Like there are some things which are different, you know. One major thing is like, things need to be much more kind of structured and you need someone guiding things a little more, as you know, I'm sure you're aware. And for example, if you have a lunchtime in a co-working space, like you don't need to control that. Everyone just like grabs a coffee, has a chat, like it's easy. But if you just get 20 people on a Zoom and there's no structural guidance, it just gets a little bit awkward. So you just need to like have some kind of plan for it, basically. So that was kind of a major learning. So yeah, and since, you know, fast forward another 6-7 months since we pivoted remote, we've just kind of, I've just been very, in my day job, I'm a user researcher, and I've just been very like focused on like kind of always talking to users, members, not users, in the community actually, and just making sure I really understand what their needs are, making sure we're kind of catering to them. So that's kind of where it came about. So it wasn't originally like, we need some accountability, let's start this. It kind of evolved quite naturally from the Indie Beers community members asking about, let's do this. And it kind of just slowly evolved into what it is now.
It's fascinating. You talked about more structure online. You talked about lunch. Like, hey, how does it work? Like, does somebody say, okay, guys, we're having lunch now? like lunch bell, you know, like back in school, we had to eat. Like, well, how does that, like, I'm really curious how it's structured for listeners who might have not done this, something like this before, but like, what does it that structure look like?
Yeah, so there's no lunch bell, but that sounds kind of fun, so maybe we'll get one. But I find what's helpful to people is just having like a predictable structure to the day that they know is going to be there every week. Because most people don't have a structure. If you're working a side project on Saturday, it's probably different every Saturday for most people. And I think adding that structure adds a bit of accountability, because you're going to show up at the 10 a.m. start and mostly stay until the end kind of thing. So because with the start and the end has a set time, it just made sense to have a set time for the lunch as well. So it's just like when you kind of have a break. And we normally try and make it a bit more interactive, engaging now. So, you know, recently we had a topic on building in public, and people would just bring their stories and opinions and that kind of thing. And, you know, we would just have a good discussion on it. And, you know, I always come away from those, like having learned a bunch of interesting stuff. So that's kind of how we approach it. Yeah.
I love that your community is sharing, you know, stuff like how do you build online. It takes a lot of vulnerability. Like, I think that's the beauty about this is that, you know, people are starting to trust each other, where versus, I think, with online communities, it's easy to, you know, be a lurker, just stand on the edges. Yeah. I'm sure you've thought about this already. Like, a big part of it is that intentionality to make sure that they kind of connected. What are some things that you're thinking about in terms of making sure that people are comfortable enough to share the topics that they're talking about, even comfortable enough to be on video? I'm not sure if there is the video on all the time or not, but like that, there's a certain vulnerability to working together, I guess, even with online.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I do think having like a community built around people building stuff on weekends is quite self-selecting for a certain type of people who are, you know, maybe not your regular kind of people who are kind of quite into like meeting other founders and that kind of thing. You know, because some people maybe just on Saturday like to do other stuff. But yeah, we've always had like a really bunch of really interesting people coming through. In terms of how we kind of foster people like connecting and being willing to post and that kind of thing, it's like a fairly intimate community. So we've got about 50 very active members rather than like 1,000 like semi-active members kind of thing. And we probably charge like a little bit more than your average other kind of paid community. And that's kind of how we make it work. But we just kind of like focus on giving people like more service and, you know, try and give them like an excellent experience and that kind of thing. It's quite hands-on. But a few kind of tactics we've seen to help people like get to know each other is like, some of it's quite simple. It's just like, you know, there's loads of Slack plugins like Donut, for example, where you can just randomly introduce people every week to someone else. So people are constantly meeting each other. Although one of our members has just built like another version, which is a bit simpler and a bit cheaper, called Catch Up. So people should watch out for that one. on the Saturday stand-ups as well, so we randomly match people with one other person in a breakout room for like a quick chat and to see how they can support each other. So that's like a really, that's been really successful for helping people kind of meet each other remotely sort of thing. So I think just the structure of how the events work has been good. But I think one other thing is like, so, you know, speaking to people, like they do get some value from the accountability side, but the main reason they like Weekend Club is because they feel like they kind of can build real relationships with people because of just like how it's structured. And so we try and like, for example, have Slack channels, which are not just about work, not just about shipping. So we've got this channel called Struggle Bus, and it's where people just share like stuff that's gone badly that day or like stuff they're really frustrated about. And it's kind of having a bit more of a human side of stuff like that. I think people underrate that in online communities. I think people, one of the biggest mistakes I often see is people only think about people's functional needs when they come to a community, like, oh, how can I get more work done? Or how can I, you know, ship more, whatever it is. But not enough about like people's emotional needs for community, which is, you know, to kind of connect with each other, but also have fun. So like the memes channel, every community should have a memes channel, in my opinion. So they're there to kind of have fun. That's as well. True. So that's kind of how I think about it.
It's funny you brought up that emotional and social part of that need. I think that's, you know, what that's one of the biggest advantage I would say about community is like, sure, like you can, you know, find a tool to do that thing that you need to do it solo. Like I'm sure there's like, you know, some app that will scream at you, do work or something like that. But there's something special. There's an emotional connection, right, with people when there's that community piece.
Yeah, you know, there's people in the same boat as you because they're pretty much all the members are pretty much founders who are trying to kind of break out of having a full-time job to the point where they can just work on their project. So they're in, you know, they all have struggles to share and that kind of thing. So people that are actually, you know, very different parts of the world and like say Australia or the USA, for example, and they're very different people, but they connect over having these kind of shared experiences and that kind of thing.
It would also add to, I mean, as marketing speak, they say retention, but human speak, like there's that emotional connection so that it's harder to let go, would you say? Like what's been the, you know, are people sticking around for the long term? Is that what you're finding where, you know, that even though they finish a project, they stick around to start a new project? Or are you finding that that's the opposite where like people are you know, maybe dropping off sooner because they don't accomplish what they meant?
Yeah, so in general, retention's been really good. Like, you know, we had like 4 months in a row where no one left, for example, at one point. So I think we're good at that. I think people do like, you know, the format and like, you know, of like the co-working sessions and stuff. But I think the main reason people stick around is because they kind of make friends, basically. You know, it's an environment where they can make friends with like-minded people who they might not have met otherwise. And, you know, there's other ways to meet founders rather than Weekend Club, of course. But we do it in such a way where it's like, you know, you can really kind of get to know people. And it's partially as well because, like, it's not too big. Like, massive communities, sometimes you can end up feeling a bit isolated. And I think Facebook had this same problem. It's actually not just Facebook, but a lot of social networks had this problem, right? So you can think of a community kind of like a social network, not exactly the same, but they find that when people get a certain number of like friends or connections, they become less active in posting because they feel like there's a bigger audience watching them. So there's actually some disadvantages to having a community that's too big sometimes. So, you know, then the question is like, okay, do you keep your community small? Do you not want to scale it kind of thing? And it's, I think it's an interesting question for like anyone building a community, because when you get to us, there's some advantages to being bigger, but there's a certain point, there's a certain threshold, I'm not sure exactly where it is, where it starts to get slightly too big for some people. So it's an interesting challenge for anyone. I'm sure there's, you know, answers to that. Like, you could break it down into maybe a few smaller communities, but, you know, I think at some point anyone that's growing a community has to ask that question of themselves.
That's really a fascinating question. Yeah. And that's something that you have, I guess you're going to face at some point. Have you thought more about that? Like what would you do if the groups or the communities got into the too big? Like what are some
Yeah, I'm sure you're already thinking about that. Like, yep. Are you going to cap it at a certain size, or will you, like what you talked about, like maybe segmented by geography? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a good question. Some of our members have put out some ideas similar to what you're saying already. The answer is I don't know yet. So we're not at the stage where it's already a problem, but I'm going to start kind of speaking to people that have maybe done this before and reading a bit more about it. But like, it's something that I'm going to have to be thinking about at some point. So for example, our current weekend club sessions, we're every Saturday, but they're on like UK time. So there's a lot of people because people keep asking me about it, who are interested in joining these things, but they're on US time zones, like where you are, Canadian time zones, you know, they're on Eastern or Central Pacific. So in around January, or let's say early next year, we're looking to launch a time zone in North America. And, you know, at that point, I think we're going to grow a bit. So I think it's better to start thinking about this stuff now than later. And some options are you could segregate it in some way. And it doesn't have to be complete segregation. It could just be you have some local channels and some global channels, right? So there's some things you can do, because we've seen a lot of like magic happen in people from totally different parts of the world kind of meeting each other and like making friends. I wouldn't want to completely get rid of that. Like, I don't think I could do that, but it's going to have to be something that I keep learning about and kind of refining, I think.
No, that totally makes sense. That's really fascinating. You're already thinking about like time zones. I was going to ask about that. The other thing I wanted to ask is about how this weekend club has grown. And I have a feeling that, you know, it's word of mouth is big, because if a founder or somebody in the community has a great experience, they're gonna tell their colleagues about it, right? So is that true? Like, word of mouth is like one of the biggest ways it's grown, or are there other ways that you've grown weekend club?
Yeah, so there's a few things. It's kind of like Weekend Club didn't just come out of a vacuum. So I already ran a monthly meetup, but I think it was more than just a meetup. It's kind of a community. A lot of the same people would come back every month. And we had a mailing list and stuff like that. That was Indie Beers. So we combined Indie Beers with another meetup called Indie London now. So it's kind of like all one thing. It's one newsletter, one Slack, one kind of group of events. So that's something else I run on the side of Weekend Club. So a lot of the original Weekend Club members came out of people that used to come to the Indie Beers meetups, basically. So a lot of people already kind of knew each other when we started Weekend Club, which I think really helps. Like, we had a really like solid community like from the very start. And it's quite difficult to build, say if you're building an online community with a bunch of people and no one knows each other, it's doable, but it's just harder, basically. It's harder to do. So the first kind of 20 people came from people I already knew at Indie Beers, basically, who wanted to kind of work together and stuff. Then after that, it was kind of a combination of things. Like, Twitter's a really good channel for meaning makers and bootstrappers and that kind of thing. Indie Hackers, I do Indie Hackers milestones are pretty underrated, I think, because if you get in the top three or so, you can get in their newsletter and you can reach quite a lot of people. So those were two things. Members inviting other new members as well. I think generally, if you're in a stage early on where you're trying to find like, you know, community market fit or product market fit, or whatever you're trying to do, where you're like, right, this is working, people really like this. I think the signal when you start trying lots of other growth tactics is when people are inviting their friends already. You can't, for me, you kind of want people already doing that, and your focus should be on getting to that point before you do too much on marketing. Like, you need to do a bit of marketing up front to get your initial people to join, obviously, but at that point your focus, I think, should be on just trying to make the experience as good as possible. Then when people start inviting people, you're like, right, okay, this, maybe I can start thinking about trying other tactics. But we didn't do anything crazy complicated for like, you know, getting more members. It was a combination of Indie Hackers posts, Twitter, the Indie London newsletter, people inviting their friends. And final thing is I do a bit of advertising on podcasts. So my friend and co-host James McKinvin runs the Indie Bites pod, and I advertise on there as well. So I think that's basically it.
That's a fascinating concept, community market fit. I love that. People talk about product market fit, and some people talk about marketing and channel fit. Is that something you made up or is something you've read? Because it totally makes sense. Like, that's a point where, you know, there must be some virality loop or factor in where people are inviting their friends into it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the first person to have thought about it, but like in my mind, I was the first person when I tweeted about it. But I'm sure someone else said it before. But yeah, it's, you could look at a community through the lens of a product, but it is slightly different to products. It's not exactly the same. So I think it warrants its own kind of term, basically. That's kind of where that comes from. And, you know, there's different things you can look at to say, I have reached that point. But yeah, it's an interesting concept, I think.
And one other thing you said that's really interesting is you said that you want to make sure you're building the community as great as possible for the members itself. What are some ways that you're thinking about measuring it? And it doesn't have to be quantitative. It could also be qualitative ways that you know that it's working.
Yeah, it's a really good question. So I think you can look at some quantitative stuff, but it's not enough on its own. You need some qualitative stuff as well. So just to start on some metrics, like I do think about, so like on Slack, this is basic, but like you can look at the number of messages people send on aggregate. And if you kind of look at that, compare it to the amount of members you have over time, you get a gauge of like, are people kind of messaging each other more or less? And it's not perfect because you can't see the quality of those interactions. If all those interactions are people saying, I hate you, I hate your guts to each other, then it's probably not a healthy community, right? but like just being able to measure that, that's good. Being able to look at retention, that matters as well. Like if people are not having a good time, they're not going to stick around for a paid community, of course. You can also look at like how much people are just engaging with each other's posts. Like, you know, like, are people often getting left on read? Like, do they just post something and no one even like comments or, you know, leaves them an emoji on it or something like that? Like, that's obviously not a good sign if no one's even interacting. But those are kind of, it's just like at a high level, basically. You can only really, the best way of looking at it is, it's not an absolute in absolute numbers as well. Like, you can have 10 people in a community and it can be really healthy. Do you know what I mean? Even if there's not like, you know, a million messages sent. And you need to, as a community manager or community leader, you need to qualitative, I can't even say this word properly. But you know what I mean? But you know, you can see yourself like how good the interactions are. Like, are people actually having good conversations? Are people kind of connecting with each other? And you know it when you see it, I think. So that's important too. Very important.
That's funny. That ties back to like, once a community gets too big, like some of the stuff that you just mentioned are gauging the health of the community, such as people responding, people commenting, people think that kind of starts becoming harder because it's like, oh, this community is too big. I don't want to put anything here. So
it's true. See, when there's a low surface area, then it's fairly easy to do. But say you're moderating Reddit or something like that, like, how do you do that?
Yeah, it's true.
We know Reddit's like in many places a dumpster fire and like amazing in other places, but like it's hard to keep track when you get to a certain size, for sure. And then you've got to figure out how to kind of scale sort of tracking these sort of things and moderating.
When we come back in just a moment, Charlie shares the one thing he wished he knew before he started Weekend Club. So quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, Ahrefs Webmaster Tool. Now, for many years, Google has provided data on websites you own through Google Search Console. I use it for this podcast's website, GoToday.fm, to get insights on impressions and clicks to my site. Problem is that it offers limited advice on how to fix those issues and shows only limited backlink and search traffic data. That's where Ahrefs Webmaster Tools come in. And I took it for a test drive and I've been using it now for weeks. I'm very impressed with how easy it was to use and how useful the data they provided it. Now, Ahrefs Webmaster Tools helped me find the top keywords I rank for, track new organic keywords, know the pages that are linking to my site and the quality of those links, perform site audit, and more. Now, between Google Search Console and Ahrefs Webmaster Tool, it really is a no-brainer. Sign up for free by going to growtoday.fm/hrefs or find the link in the description of the show. Signing up is a breeze and it only really takes a few clicks to get it set up. Well, that's it for now. Let's jump back into my chat.
I want to shift gears, and you know, you've been on this journey for so long, and I'm sure you have a lot of lessons learned. What are some things that you know you wish you knew before you got on this journey? What are some mistakes that you're like, oh man, I wish I knew that so that I can do that thing over if I could travel in time?
Yes, I mean, there was nothing like too terrible that happened, I don't think, but I think the problem was because when I kind of got into like in quotation marks the community sort of world, I kind of fell into it, and I didn't even know there was a community world, like community Twitter or whatever there is, until quite late on. So I started running the Indie Beers meetups, and it's only at the beginning of this year I realized there was an entire industry around community building and community management and moderation. It's like, you know, an old, like, rich community full of leaders and lots of knowledge and all sorts of stuff. And I think I learned too late that this world existed. And so, you know, I could have made things a lot better a lot earlier if I knew this, if I knew about books like Get Together, if I knew about like seeing the work that Rosie Sherry had been doing. And, you know, like, I was kind of winging it for a very long time, and I'm definitely not there yet. I don't, like, there's still so much I don't know. But like, I wish I kind of learned about the kind of like the best knowledge in the industry a lot earlier, basically.
And I'm sure like you're catching up now, and like you mentioned Rosie Sherry, I just had her on the podcast. And you're getting a ton of ideas from different people. I'm curious, what are some things that you're excited about, like that you want to try or experimenting or implementing for Weekend Club that just sounds cool?
Yeah. So, there's a bunch of stuff I want to do over the next year. One thing I want to do small is like, sorry, one thing I want to do soon is, I want to, gamify things a little more. And you know, that can mean a lot of things. So, for example, my friend Gizland's built in a Slack app where it creates leaderboards basically just on being helpful. So I think Circle has this built into the product actually, but Slack doesn't. So for example, you say, okay, you give each other this emoji. If someone is helpful, you can leave this emoji on their comment and it will add a point to a leaderboard. And so it's a way of kind of just incentivizing being helpful, for example. And I don't want to like give prizes for it or anything, because then you kind of ruin it and then people are just doing it like to win a prize sort of thing. But I think there's some fun, simple things you can do around gamification just to make it a little bit more fun. It's not for any kind of other purposes really, but it just makes the community a bit more fun. Quite a major thing we're doing, as I mentioned, is launching a US time zone early next year. And you know, that's one thing, but there's actually quite a huge thing in the evolution of a community needs to happen before that, in terms of we need to decentralize the responsibility further. And that's something that I'm learning more about it at the moment. But it's kind of a rite of passage for any community. When it gets to a certain scale, if you want to continue, you need to start giving more responsibility to your members to help manage it, because it's best managed by existing members rather than, you know, a bunch of like contractors or whatever it is. So I'm basically working out like getting other people to host the Saturday co-working sessions, and maybe other stuff as well. There's other ways people can contribute, but I'm thinking about what the best ways are basically, and talking to people and stuff. So those are two, like, yeah, probably two of the main things I'm thinking about right now.
That totally makes sense. It's fascinating. You're right about like decentralization, and it goes back to, you mentioned Reddit, which is a dumpster fire, but there are some subreddits who that are fascinating in that sense, that the moderators for that has done a good job of making sure their subreddit doesn't become a dumpster fire.
Yeah, and to be clear, not every Reddit subreddit, some of it's amazing, but some of it's bad. You know, it's just like, there's so many people on that site. It's some, you're going to get bad people and good people, right?
I want to start wrapping up, and two final questions. The first one, I love asking this question. We've talked a lot about community and the things that you've been working on. Mm-hmm. But if you had to summarize that in one, two, or three pieces, whatever, however many pieces of advice you want to give out, and it could be stuff that we just talked about, or it could be stuff that you haven't brought up yet. But what would be your few pieces of advice to people who are interested about starting a paid community?
Yeah. It's a good question. So, okay, so someone that maybe hasn't started a community was thinking about it. So I think one thing to remember is if you're running a community, you're cultivating relationships between your members. And if you're not doing that, you don't actually have a community, you have an audience, and there's a big difference. So I think, you know, it's not uncommon that people have, like I say, a big following on, say, a newsletter or Twitter or whatever, then they start a community. I've seen it happen, and it kind of dies out, and because they forget that it's not just about them, like it's not like one to many, it's about many to many. It's about getting their members to kind of meet each other and build relationships and stuff. So I think that's an important thing to remember. It's probably obvious to some people. Secondly, and it's related, obviously, it's not about you, it's about your members. People join a community because they've got some kind of goal normally. So like, you know, the goal at Weekend Club is meet other founders, but also to escape your 9-to-5 and, you know, build your projects kind of thing. And you always keep them front of mind that, like, you know, however you can help them on that journey, whether that's like hearing them in some way, like tweeting, like, hey, look at this awesome thing one of our members is, like, that's really important. And I think the final thing is just like, just show up often. Like, it's really a marathon, it's not a sprint. Like, I'm happy, really happy with the Weekend Club community is now, but it really did not happen overnight. Like, it took a long time to sort of get to this point. And there's days I've had where I was like, oh, I wonder how long this is going to last. Like, you have a couple of days where, like, it's not very active kind of thing, and everyone goes through that, and you just need to keep pushing through, basically, and, you know, talking to your members and trying new things. So I think that's kind of the advice I'd probably give myself at the beginning, that kind of thing.
Well, those are great advice. It's something that I've been thinking about as well a lot. Just showing up is so important, right?
Yeah.
And just one final question, where can people find out more about you? How about, we do have probably some indie folks or people who are interested in maybe joining this. Where can people find out about Weekend Club?
If you want to hear more from me, I mean, big if there, so twitter.com/CharlieRWard. But if you want to check out Weekend Club, go to weekendclub.co or just Google Weekend Club and it will show up there. And you can try us out. We do 30-day free trials, and we're full of awesome folks.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Charlie. I really do appreciate it.
Great. Thanks very much, Ramley.
Well, that's it for this episode. I want to remind you also that I have created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tests from this episode in a one-page PDF. Why take notes about this podcast when you can just steal mine? Go to growthtoday.fm/131 to get it now. You can also find this link in the description of the show. Before I end, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible, and this folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so that this show can happen. Thanks to Ahrefs Webmaster Tool. Find the top keywords you rank for, track new organic keyword, get more in-depth backlink data, and more, all for free using Ahrefs Webmaster Tool. Sign up today at growthtoday.fm/Ahrefs or find that link in the description of the show. Please also support me first, share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn, and tell a friend about this. This is how shows like this grow, through word of mouth. Second, you can join the Grow Today mailing list. You'll get each week's cheat sheet directly emailed to you so you don't have to keep downloading it. And third, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts so other people can find out more about this show. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe, and as always, keep on growing. Passion, hip-hop, fire.